We're going to start with a nice word on Parshas Baloischu. The Pusuk says, V'yaskayin Aharon. Talking about Aharon HaKohen doing the Avodah. So there are the famous words of Rashi. Rashi says, L'hagid shvuchesh l'Aharon sh'lo shinu. Aharon didn't change anything. So everyone asks the question, well, what was Aharon expected to change? What are we so impressed with? So there's a lot of different answers to the question. The Vilna Gaon says something. It's also brought from other Svarim. That Aharon HaKohen, for 39 years that he was sending the Menorah, always did it with the same Geshmak and the same Hergish. It didn't become it wasn't a burden. It didn't change anything, just like you could imagine the first day when he was doing the first time the Avodah in the Mishkan. It must have been with a gewaltig excitement and the Slavas. And that's how it always stayed. Shlo Shinu, nothing changed. He says that Shinu is Gematria 365, that's the amount of days of a year. And the Remez is that every single day he did it with the same Geshmak. And this was going on for years. So that was the L'hagid Shvuchesh L'Aharon. In this world in general, almost nothing is static. And if somebody could, you know, stick in the pin and keep something there in the right place for that amount of time, that's truly amazing and definitely not natural. And the idea that nothing in this world is static is something that works both ways. On the one hand, when somebody sees that they're dealing with a difficulty, it's important to remember the world, that nothing is static, and chances are you'll either get used to it or it will pass and it won't be so bad. And a lot of times new situations look to people like, you know, devastating, how am I going to handle this for so long and things like that. And most often the answer is that somebody older than you or more experienced than you will tell you, oh, it's not so terrible, you'll see. Nothing is static. Don't be so afraid that when you see something you don't like, it means that you'll be suffering forever. On the other hand, there are people that are in a good situation and they see everything's wonderful and fine. And they rely on the fact that, oh, it's wonderful. And again, you have to remember that nothing is static. And that's the famous story they say about Shlomo HaMelech. Different sources if it's accurate or not, but that he asked somebody to come up with an idea that he should never get too excited, never get too sad. And the idea was to have a ring that says, Gamze Yaver, this will pass. So when something's going amazing and you're so excited, remember it's going to pass. And when something's not going so great, remember it's going to pass. Now, just to clarify, the idea of having your excitement, put down or extinguished by the fact that something's in the past, that's not the point. The point is that when things are going well and somebody's either happily married or being successful in whatever area, it's important to remember it's not static. So even though it looks like it's happening on its own and it looks like it's probably going to just go on forever, no, you probably have to put an effort to keep it that way. And sometimes if you neglect it and hope that it's just going to be there on its own, that's when things will pass, because the current situation, the way it is now, naturally, might actually pass. So with that said, let me read a letter somebody write. I think it hasn't been too long ago, I think, that we addressed something similar, but I don't remember. And often, these things come up. Okay. Mechavad Rabbi Gruen, thank you very much for your lectures. I really enjoy listening to them, and I try to take the messages and apply it to my personal life. I'm Baruch Hashem married for a little over a year. I was Baruch Hashem zoicha to an amazing husband, a real Oved Hashem. He sits and learns all day and has exceptionally good midas. He really is everything I wished for. The problem is that I still feel a bit like living with a stranger. I don't think our relationship has changed much since the first day that we were married. I don't know if it's because we never really invested in spending time with each other, since I don't want to interrupt his learning, and he wasn't asking or offering it. But even when we do sit together, we barely have anything to talk about, and I always have to try so hard to make conversation. We mostly speak some Divrei Torah, because that's what he's into. But this also is just to push away the silence and pretend that all is fine. All this makes me not enjoy his company too much, and I feel quite tense and pressured when he is home. Also, in Yunim ben Ish l'Ishtoy, things could be better. Even though I try to make it enjoyable for him and give him a lot of love, I don't really enjoy it. I think I just don't relate to the love he tries to give me, especially if I don't feel much of it throughout the day. I spoke to him a few times about it, but it never really got us any further. Lately, I'm thinking if I shouldn't just give up hope on ever building a strong connection and just be grateful that we at least don't fight and that I'm privileged to build a home with a Talmud Chacham. I would be extremely thankful if you can give me any advice on what I can do to enrich our relationship and to improve the atmosphere at home. Okay. So that was the letter. Now, on the one hand, relatively typical, you know, people are marriages or relationships that they would want things to be a little better or more exciting, more pleasant. Understandably, very disturbing when somebody's in a relationship that doesn't have that kind of connection and good feeling. I'll just mention, just to commend the writer, sometimes people contemplate, I hear this often, both when people talk to me and sometimes when people write letters, between should I just give up and suffer, or should I keep on trying to get my spouse to do something about this, or should I just get divorced? It's funny how different people think differently, and when they're not in a comfortable situation, the choices and the different options that come to mind sometimes are mamas the wrong ones. If you're not happy and you're just contemplating between either getting divorced or figuring out ways to make your spouse do the right thing, then both of those are probably the wrong thing to think about. In this case, a letter writer is saying, should I just be thankful and accept that, we don't fight and I'm privileged to live with a Talmud Chochem? That's one option. And the other option is, no, maybe I should do something, and I'm happy to hear advice how I could enrich and improve the relationship and the atmosphere. Those are wonderful choices. So if somebody is deciding between acceptance and maybe still doing what I could do better, those are both wonderful choices, as opposed to somebody who's either giving up on the relationship and deciding that it can't work, or still trying to be hopeful that somebody else will do the right thing. Those are both not great choices, so I just wanted to point that out. I also want to mention right away, and this is something that I started off with the Vart, that you're talking about somebody who's married just over a year. I understand by the time I read this, it might be even 2 years almost. And like a boy in the classroom, by the time you're a month into the classroom, into the new grade, you feel like, oh, I'm here forever already, right? We're not new at first grade, we're not new at eighth grade, we're here for a month already. But when you talk to somebody who's there for 12 months, they look at you like, nah, the first month, I remember that was still when we were, we didn't really connect with the Rebbe yet, and we didn't know the teacher so well, and we didn't know the rule. And that's how it is with everything. Anyone who's married for more than 10 years, or more than 20 years, will tell you that, oh, you're married for a year or two. Okay, I remember when I was married for a year or two. Yeah, I also thought that, and that's how life is. Everyone thinks that they already got it. Everyone thinks they've already been through it. And very often, things change. Right? Nothing is static. So not only may this whole issue be resolved on its own over time, it might, but even if it is never resolved, which I hope it will be, the intensity or the disturbance or the disappointment might be resolved. You'd be surprised, not just because you get used to the unhappy feeling, but because it bothers you less and different things happen and your mindset changes and different circumstances. So I'm just telling anyone out there who's in the early stages of anything in life that things change, and you've seen it in your own life in the past, and it's good to remember that that's how things usually happen. I do want to discuss, though, this situation and see what could be done about it. So let's first try to understand the situation as being described. And I think this is just perspective, and I hope that sharing this perspective will be helpful for everyone. I'll never forget a friend of mine who said something to the effect that nobody's pimple ever bothered them less because he knew that people have cancer. Chas v'shalom, nobody should ever know from any machlis and tragedies and crisis. But when somebody has a pimple on their nose and they walk around feeling uncomfortable about it, the fact that you'll tell them, there are people in Memorial Hospital that are barely alive, it doesn't make them care less about their pimple on the nose, right? Because it's what's bothering me. When something else is bothering me, when it's personal, obviously it's personal, and that's what bothers people. It's nice to be able to feel someone else's problem as well, but when it's my problem, this is what's bothering me. At the same time, it's important to still remember and be told that yes, there are people that are dealing with bigger problems, and a pimple is a pimple. I hope you could get rid of all your pimples, but it's important to remember that. When it comes to relationships, aside from the fact that there's a lot of fantasy when it comes to understanding relationships, and a lot of people think that marriage means that, two lovey-doveys and we just click and enjoy each other's company and it's so pleasant, and that's what you see in the coloring book, and that's what you see or you hear about, or that's what you see or that's what it looks like other people are dealing with. And very often that's an illusion. Very often it's just an illusion. But not always. I will say that maybe there are people that are happier married than the person writing this letter. And there are people that actually enjoy their spouse's company and they have all that excitement. It's also good to remember, however, that there are a lot of people out there, unfortunately, and if you're listening to my shiurim enough, you probably have heard these kind of things as well. Not to an extreme, Baruch Hashem, because the extremes aren't what people are writing in about. But there are people that are fighting around, quarreling, and arguing all the time. There are people who are extremely unhappy and disappointed by what they found out that they ended up marrying. Somebody who wasn't nearly as ehrlich or good or sincere or honest as they thought they were marrying. And that's very disappointing. Now those people as well have to learn how to deal with it and accept it and make it better. And like I said, I don't think it's going to help you much to know that there are people that are doing worse than you. It's still important to remember. You Baruch Hashem, you married somebody who is a Balmidus, an exceptional Balmidus. Somebody who's trying to express love and connection, and somebody who's a Talmud Chochem and learning a lot, you're a winner. You're a real winner. And you mentioned that he's everything you wished for, and it's good. That's what you're supposed to wish for. And you're supposed to remember that you have everything you wished for. And even if now, it's okay to wish for even more, and you're entitled to wish for even more. Everyone's allowed to wish for even more. Even just in terms of a Talmud Chochem, you marry someone who knows Talmud Bavli, you want to marry someone, you want him to now know Talmud Yerushalmi as well. It's wonderful. It's still important to remember that there are women out there that are struggling to get their husbands to night seder and learn just a few minutes a day, or just say some Dvar Torah over Shabbos, or just remember what Parsha it is. And the fact that you marry someone, you know, who does know Talmud Bavli and doesn't yet know Talmud Yerushalmi, it's just something to, it's just something to think about. In general, I mean, this is not, it's not my place. I'm not here to give anyone Misr, or it's not a Hashkufa class. But there's that word from Tzadikim that when it comes to Rochnius, we should always look at those who have more than us. And whenever I'm looking at, you know, how good I daven, or how good I learn, or how erlich I am, well, there are people that are much more than me. It's important to remember that. When it comes to Gashmius, it's always important to remember that people that have less than me. Again, does it make me happy? Not necessarily, but it's important to remember. It's important to remember. Yes, I have a one-floor home, and it's not so big, and I don't have a big enough playroom or kitchen or Pesach kitchen or whatever else I'm missing. And there are people that have less than that. And it's important to remember it. You know, so that's definitely important to remember. So even before you do anything about it, just, yes, like you said, I'm just confirming that it's true. It's true. You are a lucky person. Now, I'll push even further and say that there are actually people out there who are okay with it. I'm not saying that you should be. I'm not saying that I would be. It's just important to remember, okay, in terms of an idealistic life of Torah and of Avodas Hashem and Ehrlichkeit, there are women out there, and there are rebbetzins that we talk about, who dedicated their life to having their husband sit and learn undisturbed, and having their husband only know of Torah, and they lived a life of, I don't know if it was deprivation and poverty, but there were those who really went for this real deal, and they were lechtchila okay with it. Now again, it's a big madraiga, and I'm not saying we should, anyone's expected to be holding there. I'm just reminding you that aside from the fact that there are people that are less happy than you, there are people that are actually happy with what you got, and they lechatchila sacrificed a lot of pleasure and a lot of happiness and a lot of pleasant times because they knew what was important, and that was what they signed up for. Now, if somebody didn't sign up for it, but that's what they found, sometimes it's just important to remember that maybe I should sign up for it if I can't get better. Now, when it comes to children, for example, as much as every parent wants their child to also be pleasant and also be easygoing and also be helpful and also be accommodating and also be geschmack company. And then the other day, when you see a son, a bucher, who's sitting and learning the whole day, and he's not really interested in coming to the family's chalamoy trip because he's really sitting and learning in a very nice way, not in a, you know, as much as you maybe would want him to sit and learn and join the family trip, but at the end of the day, you know, it's nice to see that, you know, real naches. When it comes to a spouse who you're sharing your life with, I understand that it's a little harder. It's just important to remember that it's not all that different. And sometimes, you know, that is also everything. Now, in general, when it comes to marriage, especially in the early years, early months, sometimes when people realize that, I'm starting to realize that even if I thought I'm marrying exactly what I want, or even if I thought I was the winner and I married everything, over some time you start realizing that there are things that I wish I could change. And you'd be surprised, I think that everyone, no matter how happy or unhappy you think they're married, but I think even however happy they look and are, I think everybody would change something. I say this often when it comes to children, when it comes to a spouse. Almost everybody, I think, if they would have the magic button that they could put on just one thing or more, would they use it? Of course, everyone would. Everyone. Nobody would say, change something in my spouse. I can't think of what to change. You know, I think everything's wonderful. I think everyone, even the happy people and the people that do accept and the people that are mature about it, they would want to change something if they could. However, we can't. And it's important to remember the things that could and can't be changed. And it's good to remember that that's what acceptance in life is about. And that's what living with another person is about. When it comes to myself, I could try to change myself. I could convince myself that there are things like I could change or want to change or better my situation and put an effort. When it comes to someone else, I can always do that. And that's what living with another person means. The problem that I think happens often is when people accept the wrong thing. You know, this idea of the serenity prayer to change what I could change and not change what I can change and to know the difference. Very often, people could make changes in their situation and better things, and they don't because, they accepted it. Why do you accept it? There were things you could do to make it better, and you should. And then there are people that they'll accept the wrong thing because that shouldn't have been accepted, but they won't accept something that they can't change, which is the other person. I married someone, and I'm waiting for that person to change. And I'm going to talk about it, and harp on it, and obsess about it, and complain about it, until what? You can't change the other person. You can't change somebody's height. You can barely change somebody's weight, if it's not yourself. You can't change somebody's personality. You can't change someone's hair color. You can't change a lot of things about people. You can't change somebody's family. And the people that just don't give up. They're just unhappy. They won't accept it. So they're accepting a bad situation that they could have maybe changed or influenced, or maybe they should have. And they're not accepting the other person who they can change. And this is where people get mixed up about what they could and can't change, and what they could and can't accept, and what they should accept, and things like that. And it's sad. It's sad to people. It's sad to see people so stuck. So if you married somebody, and I wouldn't have any ideas for you. Let's say I wouldn't have any ideas for this letter writer, and say, listen, this is what you got. You got a nice time with Chochma Bal Midas, and I understand you don't really enjoy his company, you don't have what to connect over. I think you got to accept. I think part of acceptance means to remember and to focus on all the good parts, all the parts that are l'chitchila, all the parts that you wanted, all the parts that are really good, all the parts that other people are jealous about of you about, and keep on focusing about them, reminding yourselves of them, and be grateful for them. That's what acceptance. Acceptance doesn't mean that I accept my bad situation. I accept my situation. I accept that this is reality, and I'll try to see the good in it and appreciate it. Not I accept the bad situation, so I'm a loser, and I'm a failure, and I give up. That's not what acceptance is. Acceptance means I accept it, and I'll try to see the good in it, because I see that there are parts that I can't change. When somebody thinks they could change it, and they have that hope, I understand it's hard to accept the good. Why would I accept it if it could still be better? But if you can't change it, that's when acceptance means seeing the good and remembering it. Now, I still want to give you some ideas, because that's what you asked for, ideas to enhance things. Before I give you any ideas, I do want to remind you that part again that you mentioned. The fact that he tries, you said it's not so pleasant, but you see he's trying, but it's not what you need, or whatever. We're not going into detail. The fact that you married somebody who is not just a good person, and not just has a lot of qualities that you should respect, but he's actually trying to make things better, or trying to connect, or trying to be loving, that's amazing. It really is amazing. Even if he wouldn't be trying, he still has a lot of good that you should accept and respect, but he's trying. Now, what happens is often people are trying to give you something, and it's not exactly what you wanted, or how much you wanted, or when you wanted, by day, by night, your style, etc. And I talk about this often. That's what love languages is about. Love languages doesn't mean my love language is acts of service, so you have to now do for me acts of service. No, love languages means what are you expressing to me? You're expressing to me your love by spending quality time with me? I want acts of service, and I'll talk about them, and I'll ask you for them. But in the meantime, let me remember that, yes, you are expressing your love to me, and I should hear it and accept it for what it is. But it doesn't make me feel great. I know. But if somebody's trying to make you happy, that alone is very much, very much. And not everyone has somebody that's trying to make them happy or trying to express that kind of affection and connection. And so, as again, it's something to be appreciative about and accept and take and interpret correctly. Now, you said you discussed this many times with him. If you discussed many times with him, by now you'll probably know if he gets offended by the discussion or not. If he does, it might be best to stop discussing it, or at least discuss it differently. But if he doesn't, which it sounds like he sounds pretty okay with the discussion, and I'm just mentioning this as an important part of the puzzle to make sure that he's okay with the discussion, then don't shy away from it. There are people who, for whatever reason, they discussed something once or twice and didn't go anywhere, so let's just stop talking about it. Why? Communication and discussing something is very important. Very important. I think you should discuss it again until you come up with an answer. As long as you're both okay with the discussion and you want to brainstorm, sometimes just dropping something before it was resolved is a problem. Talk about it. Now, of course, whenever you do talk about it, you want, even if he's not getting offended, you want to be nice about it. You don't want to be challenging about it. You don't want to tell him, well, I think you have a problem that I don't like spending time with you. You shouldn't tell him, I think you have a problem that you don't know how to connect with me. You want to tell him on the contrary, I respect you and I love you and I see all the good in you and I see how much you're trying, and for some reason I'm not feeling great about this and I wish we could do something about it, or maybe he could tell you what you could do about it. That's, but bring it up and put it on the table. Don't just mention it, by the way, in the wrong minute. Say it and have a discussion about it. More importantly though, I think very often, this is, I don't know if it's a women thing or not, but very often, I hear people complaining about it all the time, that women know how to, again, I hope nobody takes this wrong about men and women, but sometimes men do it too. Many women know how to bring up problems, and that's where it stops. This is a problem. So I discussed it. What do you discuss? I told you what the problem is. So what should we do about it? I don't know. I just told you what the problem is. I brought it to your attention. Very often you bring up a problem, you don't bring up a solution, or you don't suggest a solution, or you're not part of the solution. What makes you think someone else has a solution if you don't? What I mean, but it bothers me. It could bother you, but just like you don't know what you want or what can make it better, not necessarily will somebody else. So it's important to think about it whenever you bring something up, either to be part of the discussion about the solution or to come up with your own solution in advance. And very often people have their solutions. They just don't want to admit it. Sometimes it takes a certain amount of vulnerability to be honest about what would make you happy or what you would appreciate, but for a reason you don't want to. And no, if you don't say it, then how is someone else going to figure it out? You didn't marry a mind reader, you married a Talmud Chochma, a Baal Midas, not a Novi. So I think that's very important to be clear about when you discuss something like this. You don't put it on someone. You don't impose on them, you have to from now on do this because that's what makes me happy. You could suggest it. You could say, I think this will make me much happier. Maybe we could try it. Wow, I appreciate so much that you're open to it. And that's something that I think will definitely do a lot. More importantly, though, than discussing it and offering solutions and suggestions and helping your husband figure it out, is on your own to figure out what you could do. Now, you did a good thing. You wrote a letter to me and you tried to get some ideas, which is wonderful. The fact that you have to wait months for an answer wasn't so great. And I think that it's important for whoever feels that they need it, you know, to go discuss it with somebody who they feel could help them. But any idea that you could get your hands on from anyone, try to do it on your own. Initiate it. In other words, if you think that it would make you happier if he spent more time with you, for example, or he played a game with you, or he took a walk with you, or he discussed some current events with you, anything that's normal and healthy and not questionable, then go ahead and initiate it. Don't just say, I think you should do this for me. Say, could we please do this? When you initiate it, and you're not afraid to initiate it, you know, very often that's the right thing to do. Now, you mentioned that, you know, you don't want to make bittul Torah, and I respect that. You married a Talmud Chacham, and you respect his learning, you don't want to disturb his learning. It's important to remember that a happy wife is also very important, and Shechina Shri Benayim is also Torah. And it doesn't have to be on the time of his learning, it doesn't necessarily have to be at the expense of his learning, but it's not something to be afraid of initiating just because his geshmak is the Gemura Toysis Shechina Urech. It's wonderful, and you shouldn't expect him to look out of his Shechina Urech and try to come up with the ideas, unless you help him do it. But you could do it. I don't think it's a problem, and I don't think you should be afraid or ashamed, especially if you have a wonderful husband, a Baal Midas, who seems to be happy to comply and work along. Now, if for whatever reason you feel that any idea you got, or any idea that you think would enhance the relationship, or anything that you would like is not going to happen, or any discussion you want to have about it, or any suggestion you want to have about it, for whatever reason is not happening, or you tried and it's not working, then you might resort back to something I spoke about before, which is the acceptance part. Acceptance doesn't mean that you accept a life of no connection, but you might accept the fact that in your relationship, a lot of the connection will be over Divrei Torah or serious discussion, not something you really wanted to spend most of your day with. Some of that you could do with a sister or a friend or a neighbor, and with your husband you will connect over whatever does work. It's a shame when people get black and white all and on and say, listen, if I can't have what I want, then hearing another Divrei Torah, another spiritual inspirational story about a Minhag B'Tochen or whatever else, it's just not for me, I'm not interested, and I'll just talk to everyone else the whole day and not spend time with my husband because he anyway doesn't care so much or whatever. No, get what you could get. I just do believe that you could push forward and definitely get more, and it would be a shame to settle for less when you could get more. You might even want to suggest to your husband that he discuss it with somebody and try to come up with good ideas, but again, don't put it on him as a responsibility thing, just more as a suggestion thing and see what could be done. I also mentioned something interesting because Bashgocha Prutis, I was talking to someone last week who was telling me that, and again, it might be different, the fact that this was a man, this is a woman, I'm just mentioning the idea. I spoke about it a long time ago once on Komavasa, actually in my Chelema classes. He's married in a relationship with somebody who, for whatever reason, it wasn't a very enjoyable or pleasant relationship. And he tried different things and it didn't work. He got advice from this one, from that one, and things weren't working. Until somebody told him, listen, I think that you very much took the position, subconsciously, not intentionally and not even noticeably, but you took the position of being a taker. And he wasn't a self-absorbed person who was just taking from everyone. He was a giver too. But a lot of your giving has to do with taking. A lot of your interactions has to do with what's in it for me. And you didn't even realize how much you're looking to get. And when you don't get, you get very, very frustrated. If you could work on this, and take this exercise, feel good about giving. Keep a journal, log, you know, write down, I made my wife feel good. I did an act of service for my wife. And not to see what it brings, but to feel good about it and to see it as an accomplishment. I'm able to give. It's a machai to give. I'm a person when I give. I'm worth more when I give. And you'll have a geshmak in that. Then even if you might not get back exactly what you want, but you'll be happier because you're fulfilling a new role. You're taking a new position. And you could try it. And he said he did this for a few months and he felt like a new person. He can't say that the relationship turned into what he wanted it to become, but he could say that he found a geshmak in making someone feel good. And this interaction wasn't anymore this unpleasurable experience of, why am I doing this? I don't get anything for it. Because he changed his motive in his mind. And I know it sounds easier than done, and it takes a lot of work, and it's a lot of self-work, but he said it really made a big difference. Now, maybe a man should be more of a giver than a woman, and I'm not going to go into that idea in general, men and women, how this changes depending who you're talking to. But I do think that if you could try to be more giving and enhance your husband's learning and mood and whatever it is that he would appreciate, and you talk to him in the Vritoyra because he likes it, not so much because you have the connection over it, you might even slowly develop a geshmak in doing that and slowly feel better about this as well. Now, let me just say, we all have adapting to do, and we all have differences, and even when it looks like we don't, you'd be surprised, a lot of people out there have a lot bigger differences than you and a lot more adapting to do and a lot more acceptance to do. Differences aren't problems. If you had men and women, wouldn't be able to get married because men and women definitely have a lot of differences. I think this is all part of what marriage is about. And I still believe, based on what you're writing, that you really are a winner and that the differences and acceptance that you have to do are something that many people would be happy to do. So I'll just make the small, the short recap, sort of short summary over here. The situation you describe is something that, Baruch Hashem, is not terrible. And I'm not only saying this because it's relevant to the few people that are in this exact situation, but everyone in their own situation should realize where their situation is not terrible. And there are, unfortunately, people that are dealing with bigger situations and more challenging ones. Acceptance in general of someone else and the things you can change is important. And focusing on the good parts of the things you can't change is important. And then figuring out ideas about the things you could change instead of just saying, you know what, it is what it is, and I'm afraid this is where it's going to stay. It's not going to stay there. Like we started off originally saying that nothing's static, everything could change, everything changes over time, it's Hashem. And if there are things that you could do to push forward and make those changes in a healthy way, whether it's discussions, or it's ideas that you're suggesting, or it's different things you could initiate on your own, you don't have to be afraid of it, you shouldn't withhold, you shouldn't think twice. And I think things could change, and especially if we all of us, get into that attitude and the mindset of giving, feeling good about giving, the Menai B'Shazov, that's also a very good way to connect, a very good way to build relationships, and we could all in this room live together.